These days, everyone who has a mobile device can take great photos and shoot videos, showing up all the time on Flickr, Instagram, Facebook, and a host of other social media sites. You point your phone and shoot a picture. Sometimes it's a hit, and many times it's a miss. So what separates the amateurs from the pros? For over 125 years, Dodd Camera has assisted photographers, both professional and amateur, with state-of-the-art cameras, lenses, lighting and darkroom equipment, and class instruction. You can learn about new equipment from their blog or attend one of the many in-store events. The folks at Dodd Camera are helpful, professional, and experienced. They'll take the time to answer your questions and give you advice you can use. You may go to doddcamera.com to find out more. And finally, we wish to thank Dodd Camera for sponsoring the Outspoken Cyclist podcast.
Time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
And welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for April 21st, 2018. I'd like to begin the show this week with some heartbreaking news. Many of you might remember my conversation with Jackie Crowell back in July of 2014. At the time, she had just given an amazing speech at the Amgen Tour of California and was in treatment for brain cancer. We spoke with her again in May of 2015, and I've been following her progress since then. She and her now husband, Daniel, had postponed their wedding until she was given an all clear by her doctors, and she was doing some great things, coaching young riders. Now the doctors have discovered that her brain cancer is back with a vengeance. As of this week, the tumor that was discovered a short time ago has increased drastically in size and is heading for the middle of her brain, where there are limited treatment options. She is at home, and while she isn't up for visitors, would love to receive any support you might offer. You can find her Facebook page, Jacqueline Crowell, or send her well wishes at 162 Warren Street Southeast, Atlanta, Georgia, 30317. Please keep Jackie, her husband Daniel, and Jackie's sister Elizabeth, who is there with her, in your thoughts and prayers. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the rest of the show. Back on the Outspoken Cyclist, I'm your host, Diane Jenks. Our first destination is Williamsburg, Virginia. We finally catch up with Rich Thompson from the College of William and Mary. Rich wears more hats than the average guy, including one of the associate directors for the two student unions on campus, as well as the professional advisor to the on-campus Bike Alliance. Rich and I talk about the Bike Alliance and its activities, the coursework related to transportation and wellness, and a lot more. Then after a break, we talk with Kim Perry, who is the ride director of Bike Virginia. Kim is celebrating her 10th anniversary in the role of director and explains the breadth and depth of this mammoth undertaking. It's the 31st year for Bike Virginia, and there's something for everyone who rides a bike and wants a vacation. Bike Virginia is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and it promotes awareness of cycling, encourages communities to embrace biking, and promotes bicycle tourism. The ride has options for how many days you might want to ride, up to six, how many miles you might want to ride, up to 400, and how much fun you might want to have. Lots and lots. Then we'll take another short break, and it's off to somewhere north of Toronto to speak with Bicycling Magazine and the Outdoor Edit's Molly Herford. Last time we spoke, it was about a lot of the work that Molly does with women and young girls in the sport. This week, I've asked Molly to share some of the items she's found in apparel and accessories as we head on into the cycling season. We talk about her three favorite items, including sun sleeves, the hip lock, and buffs, a cooling and heating bandana. One last item before we get started, sharing the show and telling others about it. If you listen to the podcast version of the show regularly, or if you are a new listener, and if you are, welcome, and haven't done so, please go out to your podcast provider site and rate our show. Writing a review would be most appreciated also. Like us on Facebook and feel free to make comments or suggestions. Many of the great conversations that we have on the show come from suggestions you, the listeners, have made. Okay, it's off to Williamsburg, Virginia, for a conversation with Rich Thompson from the College of William and Mary. Hello, Rich. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show this week.
Hey, thanks for having me today.
It is my pleasure. I'd like to know a little bit of your work at it's the College of William and Mary. It's not William and Mary College, right?
That is the College of William and Mary.
Okay. So tell me what you do there, and then we'll talk about the important stuff, bicycles.
Well, I'm actually the associate director for our two student centers here at the college, and I'm also one of the professional advisors of the William Mary Bike Alliance project, and I also serve on the Healthy Campus 2020 Committee to promote wellness-based activities here on campus. And finally, I'm the college appointee that serves on the Historic Triangle Advisory Committee, which advocates for the promotion of bicycle infrastructure and enhancements and studies to our regional planners and to the Virginia Department of Transportation.
Sounds like you don't have enough to do. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. I do keep busy.
You do.
As they say, I earn the day.
I guess you do. So how did you become interested in bicycle advocacy?
It really started when I fell in love with bicycling shortly after moving here to Williamsburg and working here at the college. I think my background in recreation also played a part, too. But importantly, I quickly discovered that bicycling promotes connectivity to one's community and that the bikes can take you to some pretty amazing places that few people can experience by car in particular. Consequently, I'm also that kind of person that likes to give back to things, places, and people that give me a lot. And with that said, I naturally wanted to help support all the benefits that cycling has to offer.
No kidding. And you've traveled quite a bit, including bike trips, I take it?
Yeah, I have biked in 22 of the U.S. states for events or just attending conferences and just learning and vacationing and also parts of eastern and western Canada.
Nice. So let's talk a little bit about the college's Bike Alliance. What is it and when was it formed and what does it do?
Okay. It's a long answer, but I'll do my best here.
I'm sure you'll do great.
Bike Alliance is really an arm of our Parking and Transportation Services office. And it's also supported by our Associate Vice Presidents for Health Promotion and Wellness and our Vice Presidents for Student Engagement and Leadership Development. But this project is really student-centered with its focus on fostering a cycling culture that encourages our students to ride more on campus and in the local community for transportation, recreation, fitness, and wellness. And we also have a dedicated group of faculty and staff and cycling advocates from the local community that support our program, too. They help teach our academic courses. They advise our students with their bike-related research projects. And they often join in for their group rides as well.
Let me ask a question that didn't occur to me till right now, but are cars allowed on campus?
Yes, they are.
Oh, that's too bad, right?
I mean, it's about, you know, offering variety and choices, but parking on any college campus is incredibly competitive. And you know, freshmen, of course, don't have access to cars their first year.
Right, right. Yeah, no, this, you know, I'm sitting in a college radio station right now. I know how hard it is to get parking while classes are being held. Yes, indeed. How many members are there of the Bike Alliance? And of those, how many are students and how many are faculty? And are there any others who can join?
Well, that is an interesting question. It kind of ebbs and flows with our students. Like any student organization on any college campus, Sometimes we've had high years of 20 to 30 to average years of 6 to 8. But we also have, as I mentioned previously, a really solid core constituency of faculty and staff. So when you throw that in with our students, and I'm going to say on average, we average right around 20 core people per year.
And so what are the kinds of things that the Alliance actually offers? And I know it doesn't offer just on-campus stuff. It sort of goes out into the community.
Yeah, it does. We do infrastructure projects. We do educational projects. We also do a big thing about promoting our students for that next level when they leave campus as well. Our students, for example, have worked very hard and tirelessly with their faculty advisors, with me and my other co-advisor, for enhancing bicycle infrastructure on campus that's lent itself to fix-it stations, to bicycle racks, to new road sharrows on campus and surrounding the campus and the local community. We've brought in some really amazing guest speakers. For example, we brought in Catherine Berntine. She is a gender equity advocate, writer, author, filmmaker who did this movie called Half the Road that deals with the gender inequity issues that female cyclists face in the professional world. And she was one of the principal architects of revitalizing the women's race at the Tour de France. We've also had in Jennifer Billstrom. She's an owner and operator of a touring company called Velo Girl Rides, but she's really renowned for an event that she put on in Western North Carolina called Cycle to Farm. And because of her efforts, she was featured on North Carolina PBS. And then this past semester, we were fortunate to have Jonathan Vaughters, the CEO and manager of the EF Education Cannondale DRAPAC World Tour Cycling Team, and he came and presented on the aspects of how to instill ethics in professional sports and cycling in particular.
You've had some high rollers.
We've been very fortunate, and a lot of these people have just been so gracious to give their time or not charge us an arm and a leg because they see the value of promoting our bike program, and they realize that we're trying to create generations of promoting a bicycle culture and a wellness culture on our campus and our communities. And when our students leave here, hopefully they will do that same thing as well.
Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Rich Thompson. He is at the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. And we are talking about the Bike Alliance, which is one of the programs on campus. So is there a study track, that includes cycling or transportation at the college? Is there something that this would be part of as a future job or profession?
Well, I will put it this way. One of the keys of anything that we do here in our Division of Student Affairs and my role in particular is talking about skill transferability and building skills for life. And we're very proud with the aspect that three of our students that have come through our program, this has been basically voluntary-wise, have chosen careers either in transportation, bicycle advocacy, or working in wellness, or a conjunction of all three. And we don't have a set degree program, but I believe we're one of only four campuses in the country, and like I said, don't hold me to this, that we offer a course like in bike basics, where students learn the general aspects of like rules of the road, safety, promote bicycle advocacy. It's an offshoot of the League of American Bicyclists certification course. And it's actually taught by a real professor here at the college who was actually the former executive director of Bike Virginia many years ago. And that class fills almost every year. And now we're getting ready to segue with our classes to be part of our new wellness initiative and wellness minor. And we're looking to offer an intermediate to advanced course that will focus on fitness, nutrition, like bicycle touring, and all those other pieces, too, for that next level. And I think we could see some things moving into mountain biking and really bicycle touring and trying to engage our students in that way as well. So those are the things we're really proud of and really excited about.
Yeah, it sounds like the college is doing some very interesting things, moving people in the direction of non-car-centric sort of living, which I like a lot. What is the Cap Trail Bike Shuttle?
The Cap Trail Bike Shuttle is basically a project that's put together by two ladies based out of Richmond, one named Cheyenne Buchanan and I believe the other one, Allison McGrail. And basically, they run a shuttle service with this beautiful trailer that they can pick you up either in Jamestown at one end of the trail or in Richmond, and they can run you between those different points or to the midpoint in Charles City Courthouse. The Capitol Trail is 52 miles of beautiful paved bike trails separated from the highway or the historic Route 5 for 52 miles. And it's just breathtaking. It takes you by some of the historic places like John Tyler's Plantation, Shirley Plantation, a lot of history along that route. And our students love it in particular. It's less than 5 miles from campus, but we're seeing a lot of positive economic impact from that trail. I think in the first year it opened, it was like over 500,000 people used it. And we're seeing some businesses now that are really trying to build on that concept. There's one place in Charles City County at the midpoint called Call's Courthouse and Grill and Tavern. And they bought the property before the trail really kicked off. But as the trail came online bit by bit, they saw their business grow. And I think, like I said, this is what I was told. Their business grew by 400% where they had to hire 10 extra people to accommodate all the bicycling, cycling tourists that have come through on that trail.
See, I believe the economic impact of cycling can be way bigger than a lot of other people who would look at bridges and roads as being more important. There is some study that says that if you build a mile of bicycle trail, it employs more people than if you build a mile of roads, which I can believe these days. I can believe.
I totally concur. And one of our students did a study for the potential expansion of the Virginia Capitol Trail into the city of Williamsburg itself. And the showing of the desire for that to happen was pretty phenomenal. And I think once that trail does come into this community more solid into the city boundaries, we're going to see a different type of tourism than we're seeing here. I think it's not going to be different per se, but it's going to supplement what we have. And really that recreation destination wellness model is just going to explode like in other communities like Greenville, South Carolina, Colorado Springs, and, of course, numerous communities in the West Coast and California.
Right. So do you think that the College of William & Mary is a leader in promoting cycling? Do you look at it like that? You don't have a NICA team, do you?
No, but it sounds like you're really loaded me up here for a question. You're either going to answer very well or screw it up. So let's see if I can give you the right answer here.
You'll do fine.
I can tell you this. We're very proud of what we've been able to accomplish. And our education component is something that we have a lot of pride in. And as I mentioned previously, our courses fill the capacity almost every semester. And the other thing which I'm very proud of is that our students learn to be community advocates and leaders for bicycle enhancement and infrastructure here, but also in the community itself. And we'd like to think they will take that from this experience and move forward in their own communities when they leave William & Mary, when they graduate. And I think the real testament that we're really proud of is that three students, as I mentioned previously, are now seeking careers in transportation, cycling advocacy, or wellness, or combining all those efforts together. And as I mentioned about the young lady who just did the research project, she's nominated for a presidential award. And if she wins, she'll be recognized at our graduation this coming May. And herself and my faculty advisor got our fingers crossed. But we've actually had two other students who've won presidential awards for their efforts in this program. The other thing we're also real proud of is that we are recognized by the League of American Cyclists as a silver-rated bicycle-friendly university in the country. Now, we're not platinum like Stanford or Colorado State or Portland State, but we're tied for first in the state of Virginia with Virginia Commonwealth. And granted, VCU is a much bigger institution. They have a bigger budget, a bigger student population, and they have a lot more things that they can do with those pieces. But I will say this. We're tied for first, and we're co-leaders in Virginia, so that's something we're really proud of.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a lot of things right down there. Are there any new programs that you'll be bringing into the Alliance for the 2018-2019 school year?
Yeah. We're looking at some more infrastructure pieces as our credibility's grown. We're probably going to look for some more covered parking options for our students to park their bikes so they're not out in the rain all the time. And maybe some rental, locker units. I think that's going to be something we're going to examine as well. We do have a small fleet of bikes that students can use for the classes or go for our group rides in particular. I think we're going to look to partner possibly with the city if they bring a bike share online and try to join on that or work with some of our local bike shops for a lease program. And, of course, as I mentioned previously, the education component is really the key. And like I said, we're looking to bring on an intermediate advanced road bike course and then maybe a touring course down the line. And, of course, really working on that aspect of like the fitness, nutritional, wellness piece as we build this towards the minor. So those are really exciting. And of course, we've got some ideas for some more cool guest speakers as well.
Very, very cool. It sounds like the college is doing a really good job making cycling a part of the campus life. So would you tell my listeners how they can find out more about the College of William & Mary Bike Alliance? Where can they go to find out information?
Sure. Just go to our college webpage. That's wm.edu. And then we have a search bar and then search for William & Mary Bike Alliance. And that will take you to our subpage located in our transportation section. And of course, like many other student groups, student organizations, we have a Facebook page and you can search us there as well. And we have a ton of fun pictures from our rides and our courses that's worth checking out.
Well, I really appreciate you telling us about the Bike Alliance at the college. It's an interesting program. It's one I think other colleges might want to look at and say, hey, we should bring this on board and for our curriculum. Thanks so much for talking with me today. I totally appreciate it.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Rich Thompson joined me from the campus of the College of William & Mary. For more information on the Bike Alliance and all of the programs the college is working on, log on to wm.edu and search Bike Alliance. So let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll speak with Kim Perry from Bike Virginia. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
On the Outspoken Cyclist, I'm your host, Diane Jenks. My next guest is Kim Perry, the ride director for Bike Virginia. It's an event I think might be of interest to a great many of you. Hello, Kim. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show this week.
Hello, Diane. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure because I've heard about Bike Virginia for a long time, and I'm really glad we're going to get a chance to talk about the event. Give us a little background on the ride. I know it's been going on for many, many years.
It has. Bike Virginia is in its 31st year this year. So we have a long history of hosting cyclists from all over the world. We estimate that now about 25,000 people have ridden with us over those years.
Wow. That's a lot of people. How about your return rate? Do people come again and again and again?
They do. Yeah, we have about an 80% return rate, and many of them have ridden 20-plus years. We have our longest-running rider is at about 26 years now.
That's terrific. So the ride is sort of broken down into several options. Run through them for us, and then we'll kind of talk about each one individually.
Okay, well, we have multiple registration options, so it's flexible. It works with a lot of different people's schedules. We have the six-day option, which is the Grand Tour, which is our full adventure. And then we have a weekend option, which is 3 days. It's a great way for people to come and ride for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Maybe they have other obligations, or they just want to try out the event. And then we have a weekday option, which is Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And sometimes that works really well for people who have busy family obligations. And on each of those days, there are multiple route options. So we cater to multiple types of cyclists, everything from your just beginner to your recreational cyclist to your avid racer who's looking for hardcore training miles.
You know, I put on events. I haven't put on a week-long event with that many options. How do you handle things like rest stops and food stops and overnights with all those different options and all those different distances and people?
It does take a lot of coordination. It takes us about 14 months to plan the routes alone, and that includes the rest stops. We base ourselves in two headquarters locations for the event. We have the first headquarters location for 3 days, and then we move to a second headquarters for the second 3 days. So for the first 3 days of riding, we do loop rides out of location one, and those routes will range anywhere from 20 to 100 miles. And on those days, we'll have up to 5 rest stops, and we try to coordinate where the routes intersect to have rest stops when at all possible. We also moved to a new process a few years ago where we have our lunch back at our headquarters location, and that allows us to have more riding options. So the riders actually ride during the day, they get their rest stop food, we have heavy rest stops, and then they come back to headquarters where they enjoy a late afternoon lunch. And that simplifies planning a great amount because it's very difficult to figure out who would be where for a particular type of lunch stop.
Right. Do you get requests for specific types of food?
Well, you know, we were facing more of that over the last few years, and I have a prescription diet, so I certainly understand the need for gluten-free and other things. So we actually moved to a food truck formula as well about 5 years ago. And in that system, we have multiple food trucks on site, and we use a token system. So all of our riders get a token for their lunch for the day, and then they can take that token to any of the food trucks that are on site and exchange it for a meal. And each of those vendors has a unique menu, and we have vendors that are offering vegan or gluten-free or vegetarian options or have healthier or lighter options, and then we also have heavy options too. So it really allows us to give every participant more choice over what they're going to eat and the time of day that they want to eat it as well, because those food trucks are serving food from 11:30 in the morning until 8:30 at night, and the rider can use that token any time between those hours to eat their meal.
What a great idea. Who came up with that one?
Thanks. I will say I did come up with that one. And we have a great team who comes to us with a lot of really innovative ideas. But we were facing such challenges with having food catered to the number of riders that we have. We will have about 1,700 riders plus 200 or so volunteers on any given day. And to have a catering organization that can handle that volume within, you know, a specific window of time, it became nearly impossible. There are lots of caterers who can handle 500 people. They can even do, you know, a 700-person wedding or, you know, a corporate event or something. But when you start asking them to have food for a tremendous number of people and in the field often, because we work out of parks and other non-traditional venues.
Wow. So, you know, it reminds me, I have done RAGBRAI, which, of course, is just a big party on wheels. I imagine this yeah. is a different kind of party on wheels, but my guess is it's a little tamer. But
yes. It
is a challenge. I can understand what a challenge it is. It sounds like that is such a great option. So where are people staying? And I take it, I'm talking mainly about the long route now. I want to go back to some of the shorter routes later, but talk about the six-day.
Sure. Okay, for the six-day event, because we have two host locations, typically our riders will stay in one town for 3 days and the second town for 3 days. So we have about 50% of our participants staying in hotels. And any given time, we'll have between 350 and 400 hotel rooms occupied in a location. And then the other half of them are staying with us in our headquarters camp location. So we have a large camp facility that includes tent camping, RV camping, and we do assisted camping. We use a service called Velo Sante Cycling Services that provides rental tents and other amenities for riders who would like to just show up and arrive and have their tent already ready for them.
That's so awesome. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Kim Perry. She is the ride director for Bike Virginia, which it seems like such a huge undertaking. One of the things that you say about your event is that it is, let me get it right now, it's new, it's ancient, and it's amazing. So tell me what's new, how it's ancient, and it already sounds amazing.
Well, thanks. This tagline actually is specific to the tour that we're doing this year in a way because we are riding along the New River, which is in the southwestern portion of Virginia, and it is the New River is one of the two oldest rivers in the world, and I happen to know because I grew up on the New and spent my early life there playing in the waters of the New River and Clater Lake, and it is a very old, beautiful river, and we are concentrating on having our route and our headquarters location along the New River this year. So that's what inspired us to really use the word new, although it's applicable to every year that we operate the tour because every year we plan a fresh tour with new experiences and new routes from the ground up. So even when we revisit a host community, we make sure that the event experience is something fresh and delightful for everyone who's been there before.
Well, it just looks like such a beautiful, beautiful tour. First of all, Virginia is a beautiful state. You know, it's a wonderful state to ride through. How is the terrain for this year's event?
Yeah, this year's terrain is rolling and mountainous, so we plan our routes around options according to what you would like to do for altitude, you know, for climbing, and we will have a variety of valley options and mountain climbing options when we're in a location like this. The valley routes are your flatter routes here, so we have some beautiful valleys that wind through the Blue Ridge Mountains, and then you have options to climb, for example, up to the Blue Ridge Parkway. We crossed the Blue Ridge Parkway twice this year, so you have a chance to get to see some of the amazing vistas also.
Would you consider this a family ride?
We do consider it a family ride, and we also offer a family camping option, which is a regulated sort of area where families can camp together, and they have their own porta-johns and things of that nature, and we have games and usually access to playgrounds in that family camping area. We do see people from, generally, from age 8 to 88 is typically about our oldest rider that will ride with us. We have families that come for the weekend, families that come for the whole tour, and riders who are under the age of 12 will be riding on a bike or on an attached rig with an adult cyclist. So it's certainly a possibility for families to enjoy the ride and to enjoy the other experiences that we have as well, because we plan things like river floats, swimming, there are paddleboarding options, and sightseeing, and you know, other things for families to do while they're with us as well.
Well, it looks like you also have some after-ride activities. You've got yoga and massage and meditation at headquarters, all things that I like since I'm a yoga teacher. You also, it looks like people can be shuttled to different places to do things like canoeing and kayaking and all kinds of really cool stuff. So I imagine it's great for families. It's a nice vacation for a family.
It really is. And another good thing about the way we operate our tour is that you can choose to take a day off or choose to ride a short route anytime that you like. And that's unique because many tours that are point-to-point or have a point-to-point aspect to them, you're forced to ride a specific distance and you are forced to continue on moving ahead with the tour. And the way that we have our headquarters locations and our loop routes, you really get to determine how you feel and what you feel like doing that day. And many of our activities, evening activities, for example, people can sign up the day of or the day before if it, you know, it doesn't require a long reservation list, et cetera. So it gives a lot of flexibility, and that allows us to really let people experience what each community we visit has to offer. So, for example, when we were near the Appalachian Trail, we had a hiking experience that people could go on. We've had scavenger hunts in historic locations like downtown Lexington. And really, it's a lot of fun, and people enjoy having things other than just cycling to do.
Well, it does look like such a cool tour. You know, we have not mentioned when it is. We should probably do that.
Yes. This year we start on June 22nd, which is the Friday, and it goes through Wednesday of the following week, which is the 27th.
Which is really too bad because, as I told you when we were preparing for our conversation today, I would have come down this year, except we're putting on a ride on that Sunday, the 24th. And I, you know, we'll have to look at that for going forward because this sounds like such a wonderful, wonderful event. So it's basically 400 miles if you do it all?
Yes, if you did our longest routes, it's about 400 miles.
That's not bad for people who ride a couple hundred miles a week. Well, I would love for you to tell our listeners how they can find out more about the event. I take it you are still taking reservations?
We are. We'll be accepting online reservations until May 22nd, and then we do accept walk-ups if we have spaces available. So you can always get in touch with us to find out what our status is. You can visit our website at bikevirginia.org, and that's Virginia spelled out in its entirety. And we're happy to answer any questions that you might have by phone or by email. And we also have social media. You can become a part of the Bike Virginia community on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram as well for updates.
Well, I just think it sounds like a great week. And I hope you get great weather this year. Weather up here has been horrible. We are still waiting for spring. But how is the weather usually at that time of year?
It's actually a very beautiful time to be in Virginia. The weather will average temperatures probably 78 to 84 during the day and then 60s in the night. So it makes for really nice riding. It's a beautiful place for people to come to if they're living in a hotter climate. So we do get riders from Florida and from the Southwest who are, you know, are really excited to come to a place that's got fresh mountain air, you know, clean feeling air and just beautiful temperatures for that time of year. And that is a beautiful green time of year as well here. So it's a nice time to see the mountains if you haven't been to this part of Virginia before.
There is one thing we did not talk about, and I always encourage people to do this, and that's your volunteer connection and community. So I often find that volunteers have almost as much fun, if not more fun, than the riders themselves. You have a really interesting way you do your volunteer community. Talk about it.
Yes. So we have a couple of different aspects that we use for hosting our event through volunteers. First of all, we are completely dependent on a massive number of volunteers to make this a terrific experience for all our guests. So we have great people who've helped us for many years that come and take part as volunteers every year. We have riders who volunteer, and we have family and friends that come with them, and they become volunteers as well. And if you are volunteering in one of those capacities, then you earn bike bucks, which can be applied to a future registration or can be applied in our store toward a piece of merchandise or hat or jersey or something like that if you'd like. And that's really a great program. People love that, and they often use their bike bucks toward their next year's registration. So they'll come to the event, work for registration, help check people in, meet people, and then they have bike bucks to use toward their next year's registration.
Such a cool idea.
Yeah, it's really good. And the second big piece of our volunteer organization is the civic groups from the communities that we use. And we typically pay into the community about $25,000 to volunteer groups over the 6 days. And those volunteer groups are often scouts and football teams and local nonprofits that would like to raise money. We make a donation to their organization in exchange for manpower. So when you see the Boy Scouts or some group like the basketball team or the football team helping our riders or assisting around the headquarters location, et cetera, then we're providing something back to their organization so that they continue to sustain their programs that they have happening here locally in the community.
So you're a full-time employee of Bike Virginia.
I am, yes. Actually, this is my 10-year anniversary with the organization.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks. We have 5 full-time staff.
Well, once again, Kim Perry, she's the ride director for Bike Virginia. It's bikevirginia.org on the web. I hope you have a wonderful event this year. I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me today.
Thanks so much. It's great chatting with you, and I hope everyone has a wonderful riding season this year.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? I agree. Thank you. All righty.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Kim Perry is the ride director for Bike Virginia. If you are interested in joining the ride this year, log on to bikevirginia.org and go through their website. It is really a good one. So let's take another short break, and then we'll catch up with Molly Herford to hear her thoughts about the year's best cycling apparel and accessories. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We're back on The Outspoken Cyclist, and it's off to somewhere north of Toronto to catch up with Molly Herford and hear her ideas about what the greatest and latest is for cycling apparel and accessories for the 2018 riding season. Hi, Molly. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be back again.
Yeah, you know, we're starting a new cycling season, although it seems to be really getting off to a terrible start with the weather.
Seriously, the snow is killing me.
I know. And you're up north of Toronto, hanging out in Canada right now. We're down here in Northeast Ohio, freezing. So yeah, I wanted to talk about some of the new stuff in cycling apparel and accessories for this season. Obviously, we're going to have to start out with long arms, long legs, that kind of stuff. And I know you've done way more research on women's shorts and chamois inserts, but I think men might benefit from some of the things you've found out. Is there something new in our chamois designs?
Yeah. So what I've been really excited about in the past year or two is that a lot of companies are starting to get really customized with their chamois. So you have brands like Veloce that are really playing with the foam densities and how each chamois is constructed. So some parts are thicker, some parts are thinner. The sizing is changing. Thankfully, finally, companies are starting to realize that chamois need to be bigger in bigger pairs of shorts. So like a triple XL is not going to have the same size chamois as a small one. So we've really come a long way. I think the tech has gotten cheaper for it. So companies can get really, you know, in depth with how they're designing them. It's not all the exact same chamois in every pair of shorts that's on the shelf. And price points are dropping so much for bib shorts. I'm so excited about that fact. There's even this one company, the blackbibs.com, that's making $40 bib shorts. They're actually ridiculously comfortable, which is so exciting to me because everyone knows I love a good bib short much more than regular shorts.
Yeah, even as girls, we still like to have things stay up. You know, a lot of people don't realize that bib shorts aren't just about guys, you know, being able to show their chests or whatever, that they really have a good function. And I know how my husband's bib shorts work for him, but they work for women well, too.
I'm obsessed. That's like the biggest game changer I've told women about is you don't have that muffin top. No matter how thin you are, you're going to have a muffin top with bike shorts that fit properly. It cuts off your breathing. Bib shorts just smooth it out, make everything much more comfortable. It's like the best change that you could possibly make for your cycling clothing.
You know what? I'm really glad to hear you say that. Really glad to hear you say that because I really hadn't thought much about it. I hadn't seen a lot of women's bibs in a long time, and they were really, really expensive. So it's good to have a company who's looking at that. That's great. So speaking of expensive, we're going to head on over to Rafa. And I know Rafa is one of these brands that, you know, sort of is up on a pedestal for a lot of people. It's very pricey. Are there other brands that are creating that stylish, casual look that might be more affordable?
Absolutely. I mean, first, I will plug Rafa for a second and say that their core collection is actually getting really inexpensive these days, like $120, I think, for shorts in that range. And they have crazy good sales if you catch them at the season ends. So they're not always super pricey. But yeah, I mean, for a lot of people, $120 is still really expensive for shorts. I actually have been loving Performance Bike. And I know they're kind of this, like, such a big brand that you don't even think of them for making cool stuff. But some of the pieces I've gotten from them, I've had people be like, oh, is that Rafa? Because it looks so sleek and has that same aesthetic. And it's actually really well made, really comfortable. I have some stuff I've had for 3 years now that's still going strong. So surprisingly stylish and really good sales from them.
That's a good thing to know. We actually have a performance store here in Northeast Ohio. And I don't want to get into that discussion of should you buy it from a bike shop or should you buy it online, because that can be just one of those endless discussions. So many stores no longer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So many stores no longer stock a big, you know, a number of items in apparel because they've been pretty much beat up by online. So let's talk a little bit about the cold weather. Well, let's not talk about the weather. Let's talk about how we can get out in the weather. And as soon as the pavement is dry, get back on the bike. Let's talk about outerwear because I think it's an important category. What are you seeing that might be new in outerwear for people other than just the old standard tights and like the Pearl Izumi screaming yellow, you know, featherweight jacket?
Oh, yeah. So what I've seen is actually a really good rise in really nice rain gear. And I think rain gear kind of gets lumped into this weird category of, oh, you only can use it when it rains. But I actually love doing a long sleeve jersey with a good raincoat over it, which pretty much covers when it's super cold out. That works just as well as a lot of winter jackets. So a lot of companies have been coming out with really great raincoats that actually fit cyclists well now. Seven Mesh up in D.C. is doing great stuff. Rafa does have some really nice stuff, I have to say. Just a ton of really cool rain gear and even some, you know, pants that are rainproof, sort of, or at least rainproof enough that you can get out in this kind of crappy weather where everything's starting to melt a little bit and slush is kicking up. So stuff like that's becoming really big. Merino wool prices are starting to go down because everyone is doing stuff in merino wool, and that's one of the best fabrics for when it's cold out, for keeping you warm, wicking sweat, all that fun stuff. So those are kind of the two big things. I'm a huge fan of layering. I don't really believe in, like, buying, you know, a super expensive heavy winter jacket that you're going to wear, like, three times unless you're, you know, fat biking in the snow all winter long. I like just layering it up, personally.
Well, that way you can take it off if it happens to heat up, which sometimes in the future we're hoping it will. I'm always cold. So are you seeing anything more innovative and effective in toes and fingers department, you know, gloves and toe covers and shoe covers?
You know, I really wish I was, but every pair of those, like, electronic mitts and stuff like that I've tried, they've always kind of felt a little flat to me. I'm still an old-school fan of the layering system where you go super thin pair of gloves and then throw a hand warmer on top and then pull mittens or big gloves over that. Your hands will stay totally cozy the whole ride. When it comes to shoes, shoe covers are finally also getting a lot better, a lot more waterproof, a lot cheaper, just because more people are getting into all the gravel kind of racing and that fun stuff that involves a lot of wet riding. But again, I'm a huge fan of, I just buy shoes a tiny bit bigger because I have the same cold feet, cold hands. I buy shoes a little bigger, throw on really warm wool socks, and then actually throw a toe warmer in the tip of them, and, you know, you're cozy the whole ride. If you can keep your fingers and your toes warm, you know, that's money in the bank for a nice, happy ride.
Yeah, I know. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Molly Herford. She and her husband have a website called The Outdoor Edit. Molly also writes for Bicycling Magazine. So, you know, two of the most important items, in my humble opinion, which is never humble, are eyewear and helmets. I know that the MIPS technology is out there. Are you seeing anything else new in helmets? What are you doing for a helmet these days?
I actually just got my hands on the Cast Mojito for my road team this summer. And what I've noticed about helmets this season, and I'm so happy about it, is the back adjustment piece is now really getting specific. So it's like very multi-pronged. There's wires that run kind of almost around your whole head. So when you tighten or loosen that back piece, it actually really kind of latches onto your head in a much more secure feeling kind of way. Not like so tight that you feel like you're being squeezed. Just, okay, this is actually going to stay in place. And I love that because, I mean, I remember helmets when I was a kid. I'm sure you remember where it's just, you know, the little piece of like Velcro and foam, and that's pretty much the only size adjustment it has.
Right.
So we've come a long way.
Right. Oh, they have come a long way. I totally agree. Are you using MIPS technology?
I am, yeah. I think I've been using it for 3 or 4 years now, and I mean, knock on wood, I haven't had any issues where I've been thankful for it, but I'm always glad to know it's there.
Right, right. Yeah, it's insurance, you know, it's like, well, you buy really expensive insurance in the hopes you never have to use it. How about eyewear? I think that's an overlooked category that people don't realize you really need to protect your eyes out there.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, I think the biggest change for me in the past year or so is realizing that even when it's not sunny out, you really still need, like, a clear lens. I've had friends scratch their corneas because they were out on trails on gray days or, like, later in the day. And, you know, little sticks or branches actually, you know, hit them in the eye and scraped it. And that takes weeks to recover from, and you can do some real damage. So love clear lenses. I'm obsessed with the Oakley Prism stuff. Their lens technology has just been crushing the market in the last 2 years since they introduced it, and I think it's just the best that there is. But if you head to the Oakley factory outlet stores, you can get clear lenses, usually for around like $30 or $40 on sale. So that's what I've been into lately.
All these little tricks, those are nice to know.
I had no idea. I had no idea you could get lenses for that inexpensive at Oakley. So pro tip right there.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. Are you thinking an outlet? Is it the outlet store that's online?
Yeah, outlet store online. And, you know, if you go to any, you know, big outlet shopping center, there are tons of Oakley stores.
No kidding. Obviously, I don't shop. I'm the worst. I am so bad. Let's talk about commuters, people who are using their bikes to get from A to B. What are you seeing that are assisting riders to get to the office when they can find a place to park and they have a place to shower, or even if they don't?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing I've seen in the last year is tons of companies coming into the commuter jeans space, and this is definitely one where I'll say buying online is very tricky. I mean, you and I both know how hard it is to find a pair of jeans in general. So now when we're adding in cycling-specific touches and stuff, especially for women, finding good jeans can be really tough, even though now there are a bunch of options. So try before you buy if you can. But the big thing I've seen is that there's tons of commuter apparel out right now, which is awesome. But it drives me crazy when I see people riding to the office. If they're riding hard or riding long distances to get there, and then they wear the commuter-specific apparel and then don't change their underwear or chamois when they get to the office. So the PSA I'm going to put out there is please, for the love of God, change your underwear when you get to work. You will avoid the saddle sores and general discomfort.
Well, it's also, you know, hygienically, you need to change.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I don't care if you can wear that same pair of jeans into work. Change the underpants.
Such good advice. You know what? It's so simple. People just don't get it. But the first time they get some sort of an infection, they'll get it really quick, you know? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the problem with athleisure in general, right? It's super trendy, and now you're seeing all these, you know, wear the leggings from hot yoga out to brunch. And it's like, no, don't wear what you wore to hot yoga to brunch. That's gross.
You know what? Common sense went right out the window with some people these days. You wonder how they walk out of the house and not look in a mirror. I don't know. So
honestly.
Let's talk a second about people with their lightweight machines, but they really need to carry some security. They need to carry a lock of some sort. So are you seeing anything new that is either lightweight or easy to carry or makes it more conducive for you to take your bike to work or to someplace and lock it up?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. So there's this brand, Hip Lock, and they've, in past years, they introduced a little tiny cable lock that almost looks like a big zip tie. And they've improved it so much over the last few years. It's great. You could fit it in your purse or your back pocket. It's super, super light. To be honest, okay, if I'm, you know, staying overnight in, you know, downtown Manhattan, I'm probably not going to leave my bike locked up with just that overnight. But if I'm just going into a coffee shop, or even if I'm, you know, at work, but my bike is staying locked in a store, or, you know, just stashed in a storage room or something, I would use that lock and lock it up and feel really secure about it.
Say the name of it again.
Hip Lock. So HIPLOCK. And they're really inexpensive, like under $20.
Wow. That's awesome. Awesome, awesome.
If you don't have like four of those lying around just ready to roll, you're crazy.
Right. Just pick one up and put it in your pocket. So
exactly.
You know, I'm one of these really scared people on the road, so I insist when we ride the tandem that I don't care if it's bright sun, turn the flashing light on, let people know we're there. What are you seeing right now? I know that this is a huge issue. People are being hit. And my favorite line from somebody who hit somebody is, I didn't see you. Well, no kidding. If you'd seen him, would you have hit him? That would be, you know, it's just one of those stupid remarks people make. What are you seeing in safety stuff, lighting or, you know, reflective gear? What are you seeing that is more better than it's been?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I love that some companies like Bontrager, for example, have come out with daytime riding lights. So they're not quite exactly the same as night lights. They're actually designed to be seen during the day, which is great. But then, I mean, I love reflective everything. I've been really excited that a lot of the messenger bag brands, so Timbuktu and actually even Rafa's latest commuter backpack, all have a lot of reflective stuff just built into even the fabric itself, which is great because that way you don't have to remember to put anything on, right? I just throw on my backpack or messenger bag and I'm already, you know, lit up and reflective. But I think everyone should have one of those reflective bands that goes around the, you know, bottom of your pant leg to keep it in so you don't lose it to your bike chain and you stay reflective. Just little stuff like that. Anything that you can add is going to be a positive, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree. I didn't realize that both Bontrager and Rafa were doing that. I know that there are some companies, Velocity, for example, is making one of these reflective rims. So, you know, that will catch the light from the side. So what am I leaving out? Do you have anything new and exciting that we haven't talked about?
Right now, I'm obsessed with three pieces of cycling kit. Sun sleeves, for one. I was just in Arizona bikepacking in the desert for 4 days, and normally I would sunburn, like, just burn to a crisp, and I wore sun sleeves the whole time, so just white, really thin sleeves on my arms. No sunburn, no issues, and honestly, I didn't overheat with them at all. So those are my new favorite thing for summer. I'm also obsessed with buffs, so those just basically neck bands, because you can shift it to a headband. I've been using that in hot yoga. You can put it around your neck and stay cozy. You could actually soak it in cold water and stay cooler.
What's it called?
So good. A buff. So B-U-F-F. It's pretty much just a long tube of thin fabric.
Yeah, okay.
But it is the most versatile piece in the universe.
Wow, okay, that's two.
Oh, so good. And then I am obsessed with cycling caps right now. I never used to be a cap person, but I love them. I wear them all the time now. I've found they're so warm under your helmet for those kind of mid-level days where you don't want your ears totally covered. You don't really want to put on like a wool hat. The cap just keeps your head a little bit warmer, and you look super fly. So that's my three things.
Well, three are good. So can I invite you back next time, and we'll talk about touring accessories like racks and panniers in a future show?
As someone who is newly bikepacking obsessed, I would love that.
Well, because then you can test all this stuff out. That would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate you giving us all this great information. We'll list a few of these things on our Facebook page so people can go out and see what they are. Molly Herford from the Outdoor Edit and Bicycling Magazine, thanks for taking time to talk with me and filling us in on what's new in apparel and accessories.
Thanks for having me on. I love chatting about this stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's like we could do this all day. Thanks, Molly. Have a great afternoon. Mm-hmm.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Molly Herford always has some well-formed ideas about what works and what doesn't when it comes to cycling gear. I appreciate all the effort she puts in to search out and test these items. You can find out more about Molly's work at theoutdooredit.com. So that's it for this week. Well, one more quick item. What do you think about the $5 million settlement Lance Armstrong made with the government this week? Let us know on our Facebook page or in a tweet at Outspoken Cyclist without an E. I hope you enjoyed the show this week. Thank you for listening. Please remember Jackie Crowell and her family in your thoughts and good intentions. Have a great week. Stay safe. And remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening. Ride safely, and we'll see you next week.